This is Mathematics After Hours.
Hello, welcome and welcome some more to a music and technology podcast. This is Rack Addicts After Hours, as Pete's synthesized voice in the beginning told you. It's episode 167. We're here in the echoey kitchen, which now has tiles.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
I hadn't noticed.
Yeah. But first, before we jump into the music and mechnology, we must find out what you've been doing this past week, Pete.
I have received the Qubit Surface.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
And it's been installed in the Scarab, and I've been noodling away with the new beastie.
So, physical modelling, that was to replace rings, was it?
Yes, it was.
Give us the comparison then. I think we're all familiar with rings at this point, if we are of the modular persuasion.
It's obviously similar in some respects, but it doesn't have the resonator thing where you can pass another audio signal through. But as I didn't or don't use that feature, certainly don't use it in the configurations that I'm constructing at the moment, it wasn't required. And there are more physical models in the Qubit Surface. It does seem somewhat easier to control from my point of view.
Yeah, I always found there are four modes on rings. I always found three of the four annoying to keep in tune.
Yes, there is that tuning aspect.
Is that reflected on Surface as well?
It does seem a bit more accurate. It seems easier to tune it and keep it in tune.
That's good.
And it's not the same. It's very close in some respects, but it's got some other sounds. It's got percussive sounds in there as well. I think there's some piano. I'm not really sure. It's got all sorts of names if you look in the documentation. I just go by ear and see, you know, what I can get out of it. But it's freed up quite a bit of space, more space than I anticipated. Obviously, rings is bigger than... substantially bigger than the Qubit Surface. And so I have now got enough space, I suppose about 6 HP. So I'm sort of considering all sorts of things. Maybe one of the effects aid, the bigger one.
Yeah, don't you already have an effects aid?
I've got two.
Two of the same type?
I've got the small one and then the big one, but the big one's in silver.
Oh, but it has to be black.
It has to be black.
Oh, dear. Well, so rings is 14 HP in the classic shape, and Surface eventually. Oh, yeah, 10. So you've got a whole four to play with.
And there's already a little bit of space. So, we've just got to decide what goes in there.
Cool.
But the other case will be coming together shortly anyway. So so the system will overflow into that. And then obviously you're going to have spaces, and you can't have spaces in a case. You've got to buy more modules and so forth and so on. It just goes on forever.
Has it changed any of your plans for the test chamber project and your compositions?
Well, my plans changed once I visited Q121, the building, and experienced some of those really long-tailed reverbs and made certain decisions. So I'm formulating my ideas and I'm getting closer to something. So on that subject, I was going to ask you a question.
Asking me something. This is very exciting.
Well, you are one of the authoritative information providers for the project.
I hope so. I hope it's accurate information.
So I'm not sure whether any of our listeners have had the opportunity to see the launch video.
If you want to peruse the files we've made available and see the launch video, you can go to modcaf.org.uk/test chamber. Or find us on YouTube at youtube.com/c/modcaf. Thank you very much.
So I was going to ask, when you were detailing things about the documentary filming and t-shirts with large logos, I assume it would be not a problem to have a large Rack Addicts logo on a t-shirt.
I imagine not from a legal sense, like, actually needing to contact some faceless corporation and get some kind of release signed for a bit of media that's going into the public eye. I think we'd need to run it past the Greater Council of Test Chamberishness and see what they say.
The Council of Ians.
The Council of Ian, Barney, Ant, Jeremy and I.
Okay.
Because I am a fifth of the council.
I see. The High Council.
The High Council. And then the Modular Cafe Council. So there's the ModCaf Council of those five, and then the Modular Cafe Council is six. So you remove Barney and you add Akira and Ben.
I see.
Yeah. Anyway, Anyway, we'll have to find out.
What's your prognosis or gut feeling in that respect?
I'm probably going to assume no. Anyway, we're not in control of what the documentary people do, so we can't say, ooh, can you just get my chest in the shot there? So, I don't know.
Fair enough.
I really don't know.
Okay. The other question I was going to ask escapes me now.
Was it a technical, timescale related one? Practicalities of the day, that kind of thing?
No, it's gone.
Evaporated.
It evaporated. It was really poignant and important.
Well, hopefully it comes back.
Let me...
Squeeze those brain cells.
Get it out. It was...
Ring of the neurons.
Right, so we asked about the T-shirt. No, I have no idea.
Bums.
I have absolutely no... It'll come flooding back to me when I'm driving home tonight.
Yeah. You can write it down and save it for next week.
Yes. Anyway.
Yes.
So I was obviously with you at the launch of the test chamber project. I assume that was the official launch.
Well, there was the teaser video, and then that was... That really feels like... the start, the beginning. You know, we've created the resources, and now it's, you know, go mad, start work, be inspired. So it's a definitely a start.
Excellent. That's been just about my week.
Not much excitement from me, but I did go and see John Gom on Monday, a little masterclass clinic thing. So rather than just him playing a gig, he's touting his wares. In this case, a couple of Black Star acoustic amps, which really weren't very interesting at all. But he is very interesting, an incredible acoustic guitar player and singer. He does a lot of tapping and other wild techniques, including using special banjo tuners to retune a string as part of a melody, which was mad. But I was really interested in his response to the question, how do you approach alternate tunings? If you're not a guitar person, there is a standard tuning that is E-A-D-G-B-E, but there are plenty of other options. You could go drop D, which is D-A-D-G-B-E. D-A-D-G-B-E, is it? Yeah, I think it is. Dadgad, popular folk tuning. You could go open C, so all the strings when strummed without fretting any notes make a C chord. What he likes to do is sort of tune his guitar a little randomly and without really paying attention to what notes they are, which I found surprising. He said that he has a jazz degree and he knows all of the, you know, he knows all the scales, the modes and the chord progressions, and he knows how it all works, but he likes to get lost. He had a great anecdote about one of his early bands when he was in school. At that time, he was already very technically and musically proficient, so he would write all these licks, and his co-guitarist, who had to have his guitar tuned for him, would say, "Yeah, John, but it sounds a bit generic." And he'd then go away with his pre-tuned guitar, hide in a room and write some stuff, and sort of turn up an hour later after they'd all forgotten him, and suddenly have an amazing riff that they'd always use because it was way better, because he was just guided by his ears and no musical knowledge. And John found that when he follows the rules, he just makes generic, boring stuff that you've already heard. So his solution is to get lost in the guitar by retuning all the strings so he doesn't know where anything is and he can't see the grid and patterns and all the things that he expects. And then he comes up with new, interesting melodies because he has no idea where anything is anymore. And I found that refreshing and awesome because he was essentially acknowledging that his knowledge of theory and that kind of ability was actually getting in the way of him making interesting tunes.
I've quite often noted that some of the best performing musicians, the ones with the best technique, quite often don't actually write music.
Yeah, well, they might be the session type people.
Yes, but they are very adept at playing any piece of music that's already written, but not necessarily good at composing themselves.
Yeah, there is hope for us.
There certainly is.
People without much more theory knowledge than what an octave sounds like. Anyway, that was cool and actually a really good show, and it was super cheap. He played the only two songs that I know that are amazing. Those are Deep Sea Fishes and Passion Flower by John Gom. Go and look them up. Those are the weeks. Isn't it far away?
I was going to say, similar to that, I had a gentleman come into the store at the weekend, and he was an ex-professional piano tuner. He'd done, I want to say, 10 years. It might have been 20 years for Steinway.
Wow. Nobody we've heard of then.
Yeah. And he'd done it for colleges and universities and so forth. and he's had to retire because it's actually destroyed his hands completely.
Oh, that's interesting. In how and why?
I didn't realise piano tuning, especially restringing, is so brutal.
Well, yeah. They're big old wires, and especially the thinner ones, I imagine, could potentially cut you up a bit if you're not careful. Is that what did it?
Apparently so. And he's had bones in his hands removed to get them to function properly again.
Whoa, that's hardcore.
I know, it certainly is.
Who knew piano tuning was so extreme?
But what was particularly interesting, he gave me a really good in-depth kind of overview at how to tune a piano.
Oh yeah, I've never and even considered it.
No, it's not something I'd really contemplated that much. I thought
we always sold digital ones, so it wasn't a problem.
Yes, not at all. So apparently you do the first middle C octave and you tune that to pitch, and then the rest of the piano isn't tuned to pitch, it's tuned to intervals.
Right.
And it changes, it differs as it goes to the high and the low end.
So it's essentially done by ear and recognizing how the intervals sound together.
Yeah, but not you're listening to oscillations rather than pitch.
Fascinating. I always assumed, having occasionally seen a piano tuner doing something in sort of classical venues, that they all just had incredible, you know, perfect pitch and were just kind of going off.
Well, they've obviously got a good ear, but that's not how they're tuning it, apparently.
Fascinating indeed.
Yes, certainly it was, because he was demonstrating on a digital piano, but using the various fifths and fourths that he would use for the intervals, and saying, can you hear the oscillation where it's beating?
Yeah, that's something cool that you can play with on guitar. I can't remember what they're called, but it's a kind of a classic blues move where you play either a fifth or a fourth, and then you bend on two adjacent strings, maybe it's a fifth, either way, and you bend one of the strings up to the octave or something like that. But on the way in between, you get this really weird clashing sound as those beat frequencies kind of change. That's really cool.
Going to synchronization and out again.
Exactly, yeah, and it sounds awesome, especially when distorted horribly.
Yeah, he went on to discuss various modes of tuning, Pythagorean tuning, I hadn't heard before, and all the various different situations and who would want that type of tuning. So it was one of those interesting interludes.
Well, yeah, you do seem to find those good customers. you had a voice actor, and then you had like an acoustic engineer as well.
Yeah.
Now you've had a piano tuner.
My second piano tuner.
Piano tuner. And you've had Mike Rutherford. How dare you? Anyway.
Actually, Tony Banks.
Is it Tony Banks?
Yes.
Of course it was. He's the keyboard player.
Yeah.
What am I like? Not much of a Genesis fan am I. I'm getting the names wrong. We shall move on so I don't embarrass myself further to the news. And first, it's going to be a little audio clip for you. Those were some of the sounds from the new Chase Bliss Mood Mark II, now in stereo. And I'm not going to list the features because there's a lot and it's confusing. And I don't know that I can adequately explain what the original Mood did, apart from kind of sort of loop things and also be a reverb and granular and squishy stuff. But hey, now it's stereo and has even more advanced features. And I borrowed an original Mood from Joe from the shop to run synths and stuff through. It was brilliant fun. And it was a great example of never reading the manual, not knowing what anything did, and just playing with stuff and finding cool sounds.
Sounds great, but my only fear is, how much is it going to cost?
Oh yeah, no, you're right, because it is Chase Bliss. Let's find out. Hold on to your hats. Ooh, I've seen the Euros. So this will be your standard kind of single pedal format, with hella dip switches on the back. Place your bets in euros.
600 euros.
No, it's not that bad. 469. So still a chunk.
Getting close.
In the US, $400.
Is that where they emanate from?
I believe they are American, yes.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sure there will be a raft of YouTube videos soon, potentially even a full Knobs demo. I think Chase Bliss hired Knobs to make their little launch video, and Knobs has the best of these pedal demos. That is a YouTube channel, Knobs, K-N-O-B-S. Go find some of those videos. Next, we have a kind of cutesy little synth something Matron called Chompy.
Chompy.
Let me show you.
I've seen this, but I wasn't really sure about it.
So it's charming, I think, is the phrase. It's a Kickstarter first, so be worried already. Let me see what the sort of backing price is.
It's sort of OP1 meets Speak and Spell.
No, that's a very good summary. Well, actually, they haven't even launched their Kickstarter yet. I think I saw sort of a 500 or 600 squids floating around at one point, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, yeah, so we've got a 2-octave keyboard in sort of computer keyboard clacky keys and sort of looping looking section and some synthesis stuff. But let's see what we've got.
Time, we can record and layer magic. Now, while our loop is playing, we can also make new samples to add to our loop. Why don't we make a shaker?
So, fully going down the whimsical kind of route, what I believe you have is a sampling keyboard here that you can record directly into. It also has looping, potentially granulary stuff, and multi-effects features for a little ambient sort of box majig. And of course, portability is in the design. There's even a little handle on it for you to carry it round with. So they say one-of-a-kind sampling engine, apparently. Unique, apparently. Multi-effects, and a tape-style looper designed to be fun.
How much?
Early bird price, if you kickstart it, $499, retail $599.
Okay.
It's a chunk.
It's a lot of money for something that's quite novel, let's put it that way.
Potentially. It's based on the Daisy platform, apparently. So it might end up being open source and hackable. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
Speaking of open source, the Expert Sleepers Disting EX framework, at least, is now open source, which is super cool. So that may mean we have some other talented developers making Disting EX algorithms. So the algorithms that would come on distings made by Expert Sleepers aren't available, but the sort of framework to host them is. So I believe there's an example sort of released with this announcement. Mutable Peaks has also been added kind of as a demonstration of this new open source way of thinking. And I'm definitely going to keep an eye on the forums to see what trickles in. I still intend to try out the web editor to make some presets and use the Braids and Plats engines that are in there now. And they also have MPE support, which is wild. So while I haven't got a huge amount of use out of it yet, I am still quite pleased that I managed to snag a Disting EX when I had some cash floating around. Although, with the very small amount of modular I have, its huge flexibility is kind of lost for now. And there be the news. That's all we've got.
I did a pitch hearing test.
Uh-huh. How and why?
It was just a strange YouTube video that came up from a kind of piano-orientated or music-orientated YouTube channel. And he was talking about the percentage of people who are tone deaf and the different degrees of pitch ability. And then he had a 15-question quiz.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got 13 of the 15 questions right.
Mm, not bad. I assume it starts with the, is this note higher or lower than the previous
kind of
thing? Yes,
quite straightforward. And then it gets into playing scales and saying, was this note in this scale or not in this scale?
No, interesting.
And the two questions I got a bit sticky was trying to discern, and to be honest, I know it's an excuse, but the piano that he was playing sounded a bit kind of chintzy, so it all sounded awful, but it was playing a series of chords and saying, is that major or minor?
Oh, yeah.
And I was sort of on the fence about it because a lot of it just sounded bad piano.
Yeah, I always used to, and probably still would if I could remember what the chord shapes were, but I could never remember which of the major and minor sevens was major or minor. They always throw me off, those sevens.
Yeah, it's another semitone thrown in the pot there.
It's all too confusing for me.
But it was interesting because I've always considered that I've got pretty bad pitch.
Hmm. Why have you considered that?
suppose so. I've always worked with people who just can hear tunes and just play them from ear.
Yeah, it is kind of problematic being around people with unreasonable talent.
Yes.
And very, working with a lot of them as well.
It's very diminishing.
Just a smidge.
So, I seem to remember back, way back, and it must have been in the 1960s in primary school, someone came along and tested our pitch ability, and then half the class or maybe more were all shuffled out to do music lessons and us...
Oh, shunted down the corridor to do maths or something.
Yeah, something not so fun.
Your brain's obviously not cut out for arts. Or
I would imagine most of the people who were selected don't do anything at all with music nowadays.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah, so I've just always had the impression that I had a bad ear. I mean, it's not great, but it's not as bad. It's not anywhere near as bad as I anticipated.
Well, it's interesting because there's a couple of different angles that you could go if you're talking about, how good is your musical ear? Because there's the slightly sort of perfect pitch corner of the world where you have your Jacob Colliers and lots of other people who actually have perfect pitch. And I imagine there's lots of good musicians who are pretty good at that kind of thing. But then I think the other side of a good ear is, I think, your good ear, which is a really good grasp of, is that a good melody? Does that carry emotion? That kind of thing. I think that's a totally different side of the coin.
That I would describe as the process of auditing or selection.
Mm.
And I think all musicians do that to a degree.
Mm.
It's certainly what DJs do.
Oh, yeah. I know nothing about the craft of the DJ.
And it's certainly what I would imagine music or professional composers do.
Mm.
I mean, they've obviously, or most probably, have a good idea of what they want to get to, depending on their brief. But they will be playing around with tunes and they will be subconsciously or consciously rather selecting what they prefer, the preference. So there's always a sort of process of selection. I mean, you could be generating music using artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
But it will be your selection of what you choose is actually better than other stuff that you could select. Not making a lot of sense with that one.
No, I was following along.
Yes. So all in all, that was quite interesting, I thought.
There's a Brian Eno quote that I'm trying to find. Here we go. The great benefit of computer sequencers is that they remove the issue of skill and replace it with the issue of judgment. Brian Eno.
There you go.
I need to try and remember that one. In fact, I'm going to write it down in a bit. I'll put my notebook out. Because I bring that one up a lot.
Yeah, that's a serious sine wave you've just laid down there.
Here you go, sample it. Have you thought of whatever that one test chamber Q121 thing was?
What's the test chamber?
I don't know. It's a shed in Farnborough.
Yeah. No, it was, I don't know, what it was, some question about the whole thing. I don't know. It was something you said triggered the thought. And
documentaries?
Yeah.
Something about the documentary.
So we did the t-shirt, been shown on the t-shirt, didn't we?
Something about the compositions for it, your plans going out the window, big long reverbs. Something about following on from the physical modelling thing.
It was something to do with the rules, you know, the sort of things that, you know, it will come back to me. It was something to do with the stuff, because you lay down a lot of the, when you, in your presentation, you lay down a lot of, you know, no t-shirt, no this, no that.
Yeah, you've remember got an hour, this. Set-up times.
Ian talks about the samples.
Yep.
I'm going to start recording all sorts of stuff using vocoders and stuff. Reading from bits and pieces, so all my samples are original.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or I was thinking you could use, what's that old black and white film, because I think it's public domain.
Yeah, after a certain time they're all
so a lot of the archive stuff, I've forgotten, they're British.
Oh, the Pathé stuff.
Yeah, the Pathé stuff. I think that's all public domain now, possibly.
You want to check, though?
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that'd be great, though, because you might have a lot of the sort of weird nasal announcer voices.
Yeah.
Those ones are quite fun. I like those.
So what's the story? I mean, I obviously got lots of field recordings placed like Waterloo Station. Are you allowed to use it because there's an intercom being...
Ooh. Well, it's certainly obviously not like a commercial thing.
Yes.
So on that, I can't think of any objection to that. It'd be interesting to see how it sounds. Well, you can chuck it through the impulse.
Because you have the...
I reckon if you just slap something like that right at the start,
yeah,
I think it would be terrifying and really cool. Mmm, good ideas there.
I might even have two radio musics as well.
Two radio musics?
My big problem at the moment is mixing. I'm thinking, I'm tempted to lash out for one of those. Is it
The WMD?
Yeah, the WMD mix.
Might be if tricky I could to find.
Weren't they the ones
that went under?
Yeah, well, they stopped at Christmas.
Yeah, the performance mixer. Yeah, the big one.
Yeah, I need something with a lot more channels than seven.
Yeah, what do you think about the dual mono or stereo or mono?
Don't really know until I get hold of the impulse responses.
Well, they're online, you can do it now,
and I've paid my money or paid my deposit for the year.
Oh, so you just gonna wait until the Hector turns up?
Yeah definitely. I might try and set them up with this. Someone hasn't done any instructions for Cubase.
Is that someone me?
Yes.
Does that someone also need to do Reaper and Ableton?
Yeah.
But hasn't had the time or the emotional power to do such a thing.
Or the inclination.
No, I've had the inclination, but none of the other resources
are required to.
Yeah, it was a whole day just to do those two videos.
Well,
really took it out of me.
You did have a lot of flow going, you were saying.
Oof. Yeah, until from about 8 a.m. to 3, and then I realized I hadn't eaten anything. But still.
Another sugar crash coming.
Yeah.
No, I think straight to multimedia.
Straight to multimedia. Nice one. You're going to have to go first because I've got no idea.
Do you want to introduce you to the...
And now we must bring the COD past. No, I'm not going to do that. Now we must bring the podcast to a close, most unfortunately. But fortunately for you, it's the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. If you are running out of internet things to consume, we've got more for you. Pete, after you.
I don't know where you go for your weekly AI news, but I go to Matt Wolf.
I've been slacking. I haven't got a good source for the AI news.
So Matt Wolf has a channel on YouTube, and it's primarily about all things AI, and he posts very frequently. And we've had quite a few major AI announcements. Mm-hmm. We've had GPT-4 released. We've had Midjourney 5.
Oh, yeah.
And there's plenty of other new programs popping up all the time. And Matt is very good at disgorging those bits of information that alert you to new and interesting products. I saw one of his videos recently that was featuring the new Adobe Firefly, which is their...
I ain't done heard of that.
It's their generative software package.
Ooh, I like the word generative. Tell me more.
So it works very much like Stable Diffusion, except it's much more user-friendly. So you put your string of prompts in, but then it gives you tags like buttons with more prompts.
Oh, interesting.
So it's in a kind of more of a GUI sort of situation where it's, as I say, just much more user friendly. So that was an interesting video. And there's just seems to be a literal torrent of new softwares surfacing on a weekly basis. And if you need to know about that, you just need to get yourself along to Matt Wolf's YouTube channel.
Really is an AI explosion then.
Yeah, entitled Matt Wolf. So that's my multimedia recommendation for this week.
For my miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, I reckon I'm going to tell you to go and check out a fellow Modular Cafe attendee's SoundCloud. Now, at the same ModCaf where we released the Stage 1 video, we also had a showcase of taking the modular into the DAW and then getting all digital on it. So that was Alan, and I think maybe the third or fourth track he'd ever tried to make in a DAW, Ableton, and it was really interesting to hear his process. It's very textural, a bit atonal, and fully Benjolin, but I found it quite engaging. So, SoundCloud, the account is Al Gonzo, that's A-L-G-O-N-Z-O, and the track is called All DAW4SBRIIV6IZOEDM. Flows off the tongue. But yes, I found it very engaging, and I think you should check it out. There we are. The end of the podcast. We do hope you tune in for episode 168. Thank you once again, and farewell.